This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Conference 2022, held at Faith Builders from August 7 to 9.
Humility is first about our relationship with God, especially how we see ourselves in relation to God, as we talked about last night. And once we get a hold of that, things work so much better in relation to things outside of us. So this morning we're going to first take a look at our relationship with our work. Then we're going to get into relationships with parents and with team members. So first up, our relationship with our work. We're going to talk about taking ourselves too seriously. There's a story in the Old Testament about Elijah. And here is Elijah, and he is in the cave. And just before this, when Elijah was on Mount Carmel with the prophets of Baal having that big showdown, he was feeling a little like he was the only one left. He was telling them, "How long will you falter between two opinions? If the Lord is God, follow him, but if Baal, follow him." But the people answered him not a word. Then Elijah said to the people, "I alone am left a prophet of the Lord, but Baal's prophets are 450 men. And then a little later, a couple chapters later, he is in this cave, standing there, and the Lord had come in an earthquake, the Lord had come in a fire. There was an earthquake and a fire, and then the Lord came in a still small voice and says, when Elijah heard it, he wrapped his face in his mantle, right here, and went out and stood in the entrance of the cave. Suddenly a voice came to him and said, "What are you doing here, Elijah?" And he said, "I have been very zealous for the Lord God of hosts, because the children of Israel have forsaken your covenant, torn down your altars, and killed your prophets with the sword. I alone am left, and they seek to take my life." And you know, Elijah thought he was the only one left. He thought his job was very serious, which it was, no doubt, and God used him. But you know, he was not the only one left. Just a little later, God mentions to him in his still small voice, "And by the way, Elijah, I still have 7,000 who have not bowed the knee." 7,000 whom Elijah somehow was not acknowledging, was not seeing, was not thinking about. He felt his own job so important. He was taking himself too seriously. Something that's very easy to do. Pride distorts our view of reality, whereas humility gives us an accurate view of the truth. Pride distorts our view of reality. It makes us do silly things. And one of those silly things is taking ourselves too seriously, which, if we were shown that in the moment, we would feel foolish. But we do this. We take ourselves too seriously because we think we're so important. We feel too indispensable to take a break from our work sometimes. And we're too important to allow others to have unflattering impressions of us. like me, getting ready for this talk the other day, I simply was having a hard time finding the time, and I was getting scared and frustrated that I couldn't get this done. And so I finally blocked myself off a day where I could get something done, and then I got a call from school, and I had to go back to school and work on a situation, and my teacher kindly told me, well, I guess you're just going to be humiliated when you get up there. So, thanks a lot. A free shortcut to humility. Well, that was helpful, actually, because I was in that place of taking myself too seriously. And then I found myself doing that again yesterday, driving up here, working on last night's talk on the road, and just actually panicking because it's not perfect. It's not working. This is going to go over horribly, you know. And my wife was driving, looking over at me, and she really was worried. I mean, she was. This was worse than usual. And it was just really hard to take my own advice at that moment. Getting all tied up in knots about myself, about my performance. You know, this is not necessary for people who believe in God, for people who trust God, for people who know that God is looking out for them, and they're not the ultimate answer. What I should have been thinking about, and what I was trying to think about, is, you know, what I'm doing there, it's just a small part of the event for people. It doesn't actually matter if my talk is boring or if it doesn't make sense or if, you know, it doesn't make that much difference. They're going to enjoy the weekend anyway. They didn't come to hear me. They came to be with all these other people and, you know, to have a good time, to learn something. Hopefully I can benefit them, but it's really not that big of a deal. Just get over yourself. So, taking yourselves too seriously. Another affliction of teachers is perfectionism. So we're often idealistic as teachers. That's why we're teachers. And we're often perfectionistic. We have crazy high standards for ourselves. And we burn out because of these things. It's perfectionism and burnout go hand in hand. And you know, I had a moment of truth when I was teaching and coming up against some of this stuff, when I thought about the community expectations, the expectations of the people that had put me here in this school. So my thoughts sort of went like this. You people in this community have hired me to teach these children. You have chosen not to bless this school with as many teachers as would be helpful. Therefore, I am teaching approximately 10 classes per day. By the way, people, did you know that that is impossible? You must want to burn me out. You are not very nice. Second thought, maybe that's actually not their thought. Maybe you had confidence in my prioritization abilities, my winging it abilities. So my first year of teaching, I thought this multiple times as I taught that year, that teaching is my life. I eat, sleep, and breathe teaching. And I think that's probably good for the first year. But you can't do that for years and years and keep going. And when I finally came to grips with my community's expectations, that they didn't really actually want to burn me out, that they were not trying to kill me, that they probably expected me to work less than I was, that they expected me to cut certain corners. They expected me to do the best I could with what I had and still have a life. That was freeing to realize that. That I was holding myself to this unsustainable standard of performance that nobody else was. You know, we teachers make really good martyrs sometimes. And then another moment of truth came last year when I was struggling to help our teachers manage their intense workload, a workload that they probably felt that I had put over them. And I had a conversation with a mentor who reminded me about the 80-20 rule. The 80-20 rule, which says that 80% of your effect comes from 20% of your efforts. And what's really important is figuring out which 20% that is. And saying, I can get a lot done and have a large effect with a certain amount of effort. Everything after that is diminishing returns. And while it's really nice to take things to perfection or near perfection sometimes, we can't realistically do that for most of our work in teaching. We have to be content with doing the 20% that gets the most benefit and then move on to the next thing. And that is really hard to actually come to grips with and settle with when you're a teacher, because it just feels wrong. It feels like we're letting somebody down, we're letting ourselves down. But it's something to come to grips with, and I think that advice was really helpful for all of us. So please, let's humble ourselves. Let's humble ourselves. This is where humility comes in. Humble ourselves. Let's find out what the real expectations are, and let's be okay with accepting what the expectations are, even if they're less than our high expectations. Let's be okay with doing some things less than perfectly. Let's take advice. Let's ask people, look, what do you see here? What should I do? And let's take that advice. And let's not stress too much and take ourselves too seriously. Well, if pride is taking ourselves too seriously, then one antidote to that is humor. What do you have when you take humility plus humor? Well, I found this and I like it. Humility plus humor equals joy. Just think about the people who are truly joyful. Aren't they people that are humble and that are able to see the funny things all around them all the time? There's a real connection between humility and humor, because, you know, there really is something kind of humorous about being human, being made out of dirt. It's just kind of absurd, actually. And there's so many absurd things that happen every day. And when we don't take ourselves too seriously, we see those things, and they're funny, and we laugh. And it's part of being human under God. So have fun. Have fun with your kids. Have fun with your teammates, your parents, your board, whoever you're with. Just have fun. Just relax. I would rate myself fairly poorly on this one, maybe a C. It's just not my gift to be funny a lot of times, I think. I just have too much on my mind. I have too much to do. I've got to get it done. This is so important. We were visited by this consultant earlier this year. We hired somebody, a Protestant person, and his comrade. They came and they t- take a look at our school, helped us with some marketing things. Well, when he came, he talked about that his only other experience with a Mennonite school, there's a school down in Virginia somewhere, I didn't recognize it, but he had a really good impression of that school, he said, because they just had such a good time. They laughed all the time. Their whole weekend, they were just laughing all the time. It was so great. He was just, I think, really hoping that this Mennonite school would be, you know, we would have such a good time just like them. Well, I'm afraid I let him down. It wasn't like that. I was dead serious about getting our money's worth out of these guys. That was the other thing about Mennonites, I didn't tell him. Yeah. All right, so there's Ronald Reagan, one of the most powerful men in the world who was known for his humor. There was an assassination attempt on him, and this was right around the time where the world was really close to nuclear disaster. He was thinking about these things, and he was going to the hospital after he had been shot. And he was still seeing the funny side. You know, some people may think he was disengaged from reality, but people who knew him would have said that his humor was an expression of his deep-rooted humility. He told the doctors before going into surgery, "I hope you all are Republicans." When his wife, Nancy, arrived at the hospital, he said, "Honey, I forgot to duck." He was scribbling lines on paper for the nurses because he had a breathing tube, unable to speak. He wrote, "Could we rewrite this scene beginning about the time I left the hotel?" And then at one point he quoted Winston Churchill's famous line about how there was nothing more exhilarating than to be shot at without result. The beauty of humility in relationship with parents and team members. So here is a few monks. "Could you tone down your humility a bit, Brother Jerome? Some of the other monks are getting jealous." And a related joke. Two monks were discussing humility. The one monk said, "I have been praying and fasting, meditating and studying religion for 20 years. I have finally reached a level of humility. I am truly a nothing," said the one monk. The other monk nodded gravely. "I too have spent my life devoted to serving God. I am also a nothing." At that moment, a janitor passed, holding his mop, and he overheard the conversation, and feeling quite spiritual himself, he said, "You know what? I also am a nothing." The monks looked away in disgust. Who does he think he is? He can't be a nothing. You know, humility is a beautiful thing. But you know, it doesn't usually work like this. It doesn't cause jealousy. That's why it can be a race to the bottom that everybody can win. Everybody can win at being humble, and other people do not mind. If other people mind, then something besides humility is going on. Because humble people put other people in a good light, not themselves. It's impossible to be a humble person and draw attention to yourself. So status is completely set aside. The value of others is the goal. Everybody gets to be a nobody together. And the more nobodies there are, the happier everybody is. You know, one nobody can light up a room with their radiant humility. Two nobodies can light up an entire building. And the more you have, the merrier it gets. It can take, you know, a single humble person in a group of people can make a huge difference. It doesn't, other people don't actually have to be a part of that. But as I am humble, it encourages other people to join and also take the role of humility. So in our relationships, there's so many relationships, intense relationships. When we signed up to teach, we signed up for relationships everywhere. And there's so many chances to exercise this humility. Relationships with parents. You know, as a teacher, I love my relationships with students. That energized me. And many times at the beginning of a day, I felt like I didn't have what it took to teach that day. I didn't have my stuff together. But I thought, you know, as soon as those students come in here, as I look at them, as I talk to them, they're going to give me energy. And it's going to be okay. We're going to get through this day. Their energy and my energy is going to work together. We're going to have a good time. And so often it worked that way. And that was one of the, you know, the most beautiful things about teaching. But relating to the adults, that was a lot more complicated. How many of you, I'm curious, look forward to parent-teacher conferences? Okay, well, thankfully, we've got a number of hands. That's great. You know, I remember a school administrators conference a number of years ago where David Yoder was sharing, and he's a very humble man, and he was talking about parent-teacher conferences and how he looked forward to them so much. He just loved them. And I remember hearing this and being floored because I did not love them. In my parent-teacher conferences, there were always a number of parents who were very encouraging. And there was a woman who always brought in some kind of snack, like some Chex Mix or something that she had made. And she would always do that and always thank me and always be very encouraging. But there was always one mom, at least, who was very emotional, who was just talking and talking about her worries for her children and, you know, how she's thinking about everything I do at school and how it intersects with her worries for her children. And I would go home from parent-teacher conferences, and my wife always had a mop me off the floor job when we got home. Just so many opportunities to get feedback from parents, just one after the other, and you know not all of it's going to be positive. Oh, an incredible opportunity to grow in humility. But you know, I really wanted to get to this place where I could enjoy and look forward to parent-teacher conferences like David had talked about. And I don't know if I ever actually really got there, but I think I did grow up a little bit. And as I look at that now, I think about how our parents, our patron parents, they're actually our customers. We are essentially contractors for them, helping them to fulfill the job that God has given to them. They have hired us to do their work. So we're serving the parents. That's our number one customer, more than the student, actually. And as I have been a parent more and more, this year we have 4 children in school, and I've come to really appreciate the work that the teachers are doing. I, as a parent, I love going to parent-teacher conferences. And from the parent side, it just doesn't look like a big deal. I'm just going to go to the teacher, and we're going to talk about my child, and I get to hear from them, they get to hear from me a little bit. And I love it. So maybe all it would take for teachers to love conferences is for them to become parents. That would be easy, right? No, really, I think they will always be hard in some ways. But I think they would be less hard if we were less sensitive, if we were less concerned about their approval and disapproval, less scared of critique, if we were more reliant on God, more realizing that this is His work, we are a small part of it, less possessive of our classroom, our way of doing things, less convinced that my teaching is a really big deal, taking yourselves less seriously, having more of a aw shucks mentality. I get to talk to the parents today. Sure, I'm a little nervous. I'll learn a few things. I'll get to know them better. Maybe I'll get to learn a few more things about their student that will help me teach better. It's going to be a good time. Let's go. Parents, sometimes in conferences or otherwise, parents have concerns. So, the statement, the customer is always right, has been around for a long time, since early 1900s, I think. How many of you agree with that statement? Okay, nobody wants to raise their hand. But how is that phrase valid? Would somebody like to say, maybe that statement is not always true, but how is it actually a valid statement that's still valuable to think about? Anybody want to say something?
We should do the best we can to serve customers.
Thank you. We should do the best we can to serve customers. You know, from a black and white perspective, a truth perspective, this makes no sense. A customer is often wrong. But a humble person will allow that the customer may have a point, that here's an opportunity to empathize with that person, to try to truly understand what the issue is. So many times there is a difference in perspective. And here's an opportunity to learn to know that person better, to learn how they developed that perspective, to learn what is behind that concern or complaint that on the face does not make sense to us. And then we can do what is in our power to solve their issue. So instead of saying the customer is always right, we could say the customer is someone that I can serve as I seek to understand their perspective. Because even if they're not right, anything that they say reveals something about how they think. And that's an opportunity to get to learn to know them. Like, why do they think that way? What is behind that? There could be a whole story behind what they said there. We have no clue what that is. So this is an opportunity to have a conversation, to learn how they develop that perspective and what they are bringing to the situation. What if, though, you think the customer is just trying to control things? We can't let them do that. And that soon turns into a battle for control, which then turns into a battle of egos. Who is going to be on top, me or you? And we forget that we were called to serve, to wash their feet, to win by love, to humble ourselves under the mighty hand of God so He can exalt us in due time. Of course, there is such a thing as school policies of we have to do the right thing here. We can't just do what you're asking. And figuring out what to do in those situations is difficult, very difficult. And calls for a lot of discernment and a lot of humility as we work with each other in our schools, as we work with our school leadership, as we interpret policies, as we sometimes make exceptions. cause for a lot of humility and discernment with each other, working together. Last year, we had a sensitive situation with a parent. We were afraid things were going to blow up, and thankfully they did not. So a parent was questioning a statement that we had on our website. That summer, we had been working to become more clear about our position on gender issues, which is becoming a deal. And so we put a statement on our website that clarified our position. And when some parents learned about this and were not happy about this, the group of parents we serve, many of them are not Christian or not conservative. So some parents were discussing it, and this parent was particularly concerned and wasn't sure if she wanted to associate with a school that held such narrow and right-wing views. And the statement we had adopted a statement from ACSI that was, I thought, really well-worded, really backed up by Scripture, and said everything that it needed to say. Well, she thought this statement was the Nashville statement. And the Nashville statement was something that a group of Christians had come together in Nashville and come up with a statement about gender issues. This wasn't the Nashville statement, but she thought it was. And that was, if that was the Nashville statement and we had that on our website, we were aligning ourselves with the political right. And so we're taking political sides, basically. And that's was not our intention at all. We did not want to be taking sides. We did not want to be fighting in a political way. Well, we took a look at that, and our board looked at it, and it took some, humble back and forth with our board and thinking maybe we should be saying this a little differently. Not backing down, not succumbing to pressure, but just being willing to say it differently, to say it more graciously. So we made some changes. We came back to the parent later and had some long conversations, and they were happy. They really appreciated our clarification, the way that we could restate what we said, make it a little less in your face, and clarify who we were. Humility enables teamwork. Working together is not a contest in which to compete. It's a puzzle which you together complete. There was an experiment done by a person named Peter Skillman. It was a fairly long research study. He did this experiment numerous times, dozens of experiments. He took kindergartners and he took business school students from college, and he put them in cooperative groups. Like, he would put a group of kindergartners together, he put a group of college students together, and he gave them marshmallows and uncooked spaghetti, so long sticks of spaghetti. And he gave them the instructions: I want you to build the tallest structure you can with these marshmallows and this spaghetti. Incredibly, the kindergarten structures were always taller. The kindergartners, their structures averaged 26 inches tall versus the college students were 10 inches tall. And then later he did the same experiment with attorneys and CEOs, in the one groups versus the kindergartners in the other groups. Same results. So what would explain that? Well, what he said was that the adults were engaging in this thing called status management. They were preoccupied with recognition and how they appeared to others. Whereas the kindergartners were just shoulder-to-shoulder exploration. Status wasn't a thing. Let's just do this and have fun. And the results were better. It's very possible to engage in status management as teachers. I have a story about my teachers, and they're going to get me for this when we get home. Just like my children, when I preach about them, why did you have to say that? And I will apologize. I love my staff here, as I pointed out last night, and my staff love to talk. And last year, a lot of us were new, actually, and one of the things that we noticed immediately about our elementary staff meetings was that we just loved to talk and talk and talk and talk, and we could barely get anything done. And you know, this year we've calmed down a little bit. And my guess is last year, with everyone so new and just not really knowing each other, trusting each other, we were doing a bit of status management with our talking. Just trying to demonstrate our competence, maybe a little much. And once we learned to know each other and felt more secure, that wasn't as necessary. And that's where humility can be a real blessing, as we feel secure in who we are, feel secure in God, in our relationship with Him. We can be calm and not need to think about our status. So humility frees us from status management. It also allows us to accept and forgive failures in ourselves and others. You know, one of the problems with working with humans is that they are so downright human. How do we handle this? Well, we've got to learn to rap. You don't know how to rap? I come from Baltimore. I will teach you how to rap. So how's how we rap? So first of all, when we rap, we remember my own shortcomings. We remember my own shortcomings. We recall that while we are glorious creations of God, we are miles, we are millions of miles, we are light years away from the glorious beauty and perfection of God. And when other people act in unsanctified and unhumble ways, we think maybe perhaps God in His grace has allowed us to move a little closer to His perfection than this other person who is annoying and hurting us. And then we remember that we ourselves are light years away from God's perfection. So if you think about this in perspective, like I am here and somewhere out there is God in His perfection. And light years is actually quite a long distance. You know, it's not just over the hill, it's actually out there on another universe somewhere. That's how far we are away from that. And I'm here, and maybe right now this other person is back here. Okay? So I could look at that great difference between us and think, wow, that's incredible how far ahead I am of that person. And there's God looking back at both of us, barely able to see any difference at all, and wondering why I'm making such a big deal about this. It's silly to bring it up. Yes, we're imperfect and unsanctified. We're humans. And we need to remember humility, both from the same root that means dirt. Humus for humility. Humans comes from the same root because we are made out of dirt. So remember my own shortcomings, that I do those things too. I'm not so much different than they are. And even if I have managed to get over that, it's actually not that much different. It's not that, we're not that different. Assume, so remember our own shortcomings. Assume the best in others. It's so easy to make assumptions that another person's motives were bad. But it's also easy to assume that their motives were good. And even if we are wrong and their motives were bad, everybody's better off if we had just assumed that they were good. It's okay to be wrong in that way. And the results will be much better. So assume the best in others and then pray. Pray for forgiveness for that person. And pray that God could bless their day and they could have a better day. There is a story that I ran across about a man who was flying, and the flight attendant was grumpy. The flight attendant was barking orders to turn off electronics, and just the way she was acting set everybody on edge. And this person flying thought, she really needs to work on her people skills. He was surprised that they would have a person like this working for them. But then he remembered another trip where he was short with someone, where he was in a hurry, where he was tired, where he ended up being rude. And it wasn't the person that he wanted to be. It didn't reflect who he hoped to be or who he really was. So he remembered his own shortcomings. And then he began assuming the best about her, assuming that maybe she had a sick child. Maybe she was not feeling very well herself. Maybe she was working overtime or just very tired. And then he began to pray. He began to pray like Jesus told us. In Matthew 5:44, pray for them which despitefully use you. He prayed that God would bless her and that he could bless her. He felt his heart changing and he wanted to bless her. And when she came to his seat, he told her, I want you to know how grateful I am for you and the way you serve us. Your job really matters. And you make our flight easier. She was taken aback, and she stopped, and she paused, and she thanked him, and she told him it had been a really hectic day. She had had one complaint after another. He'd been the first person to thank her for a long time, and she really appreciated it. And he said she was a different person for the rest of the flight. So humility is beautiful. It allows us to have a healthy relationship with our work, not taking ourselves too seriously, not getting hung up on our own perfectionistic performance requirements. It points us toward humor. Humor and humility make for joy. And it shows us that we can learn to love parent-teacher conferences, and that the customer, while maybe not always right, is a person with a valid perspective that we need to take the time to learn, know, and understand. Humility helps us to wrap, to remember, assume, and pray. Humble yourselves in the sight of the Lord, and he will exalt you.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call us at 814-789-4769. Recordings from past events are also available at www.thedocforlearning.com.